see what it says? This ain't a bunch of letters like any other union. It says FIST! And that's what we are! Every guy in here, a fist! One fist!
I should have broke your thumb!
That's the greatest night in the history of my life. I just want to say one thing to my wife and home. Yo, Adrian! I did it!
Nothing is over! Nothing!
Murdoch. I'm coming to get you.
You want to talk? We'll talk. I'm a sucker for good conversation.
Welcome to the Stallone Fanatics Podcast.
This episode of Stallone Fanatics Podcast, we have Jack Vecchio, who's an actor in his own right, a Stallone and Rocky fan. Welcome to the show, Jack.
Yeah, Stallone and Rocky fan, in that order. I mean, it's true. It's like I was a Stallone fan first, for sure.
Right, right.
And that was in 72.
Wow.
I saw, yeah, you know what? It's really weird because I saw Stallone in a film with Jack Lemmon.
Oh yeah,
and I was fascinated with Prisoner Second Avenue.
Yep,
and I remember thinking, "Oh my gosh, I'm hoping this guy is in this movie a lot more." And he only had one scene, and I was like, "Oh wow, there was something really appealing about that guy." And I thought, "Oh boy," and then I didn't see him around anymore. And then Lords of Flatbush,
Yep.
And I was like, "Oh boy, there he is again. This guy has got he's got that something." I could, at that time. I was a young actor. I didn't know how to put my finger on it, but I knew he stood out. Like in a crowd, he would stand out. He has that intangible it, that X factor.
For sure.
So yeah, I've been definitely a Stallone fan, and then in 76, I had just really started my acting career, you know, doing stage.
Oh, okay.
And, I started on stage. I was doing like, Arsenic and Old Lace. And I did a little bit of Shakespeare just because I was supposed to do that. But I went to a huge theater in Manhattan to see what this whole buzz was about this Rocky movie, you know?
Right.
And I actually snuck under the velvet rope because the show before ours was watching the movie, and I could hear people applauding. I could hear people yelling. And I thought, wow, you know, I'm 15 years old, and I'm like, people are yelling in the theater like they're watching a live show. So I actually snuck in the doors, and I happened to catch the running scene.
Oh, yeah.
And when it got to the top of the stairs, some of the people stood up, but everyone applauded.
Yep.
And I thought, my God, that's an actor's dream, that to be able to motivate an audience like that. I was like, someday I would love to put on a performance where the audience is so motivated, they leave their seat.
Right.
Like they're watching it live, you know? So yeah, then I knew I was hooked, and, you know, and I love the attitude of, you know, no matter how bad or how down things are, you know, Rocky always saw the glass half full.
Absolutely.
I've been a diehard fan. I mean, my house actually looks like a Rocky gift shop.
That's my kind of house.
I have like fills of taken from the set, and a friend of mine, Larry Romano, did Lock Up with Stallone. And
oh yeah,
I have the poster of Spider Rico versus Rocky Balboa framed in my house. And
nice.
A whole bunch of pictures that I got a hold of. I'll tell you something interesting. When I live in San Diego, I know you live in a colder part of the world.
But, that's right.
But I would love to have done this out here with you. But when I left New York, I had acquired one of the original Rocky marquee movie theater posters framed.
Right.
And I left it at my grandmother's house when I left for California, because the thing is enormous. And I told her, I said, if you ever move or anything, and yeah, she moved. And I assumed she took that with her. And I'll tell you something, she left it behind. And years later, I heard that this family in Queens bought a house and found it.
Right.
My grandmother, and they found it in the house, and they auctioned it off for $8,000.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, not only would I have probably purchased it back, but that was mine. I would have never sold that.
Wow.
Those people found it. They must have thought they hit a gold mine when they came across that. And I was like, well, that was one of my absolute prized possessions. I was really sorry Grandma forgot that behind.
No doubt.
Yeah. So,
what a kick in the gut that must have been.
Yeah.
Man.
You know, it's funny. I was speaking of you on the Stallone Fanatics Facebook thing, and I mentioned that I was 1 degree of separation. You know, the Kevin Bacon.
Yeah.
Well, I'm 1 degree of separation in my acting career. I said on 6 different levels, I'm 1 degree of separation from Stallone.
Right.
Come close, and I mean, that would be my ultimate dream. That would be my crown jewel. To work with Stallone, but I had mentioned that, and then all of a sudden, your followers on that site are so very diligent, so unbelievable, and one after another started saying you are actually 8 times 1 degree of separation from Stallone, and then they started listing, and I was like, oh man, because Larry Romano is a friend of mine I worked with on Out for Justice, and he was in Lock Up with Stallone. Kim Basinger, who was in Grudge Match,
yep.
You know, with Ron, I did a commercial with her. Brian Dennehy, I did Search for Justice with him.
Nice.
And Gina Gershon, I did Out for Justice. And Christian De La Fuente played one of the drivers in Driven. And I did Pensacola with him.
Nice.
Art LaFleur played his captain in Cobra. And we did a commercial together. And I worked with Carl Weathers for like 2 months.
Nice.
While he was directing, yeah, and Rick Zumwalt, who was in Over the Top.
Oh yeah,
and we did an Easter movie together. We played a couple of very bad Roman soldiers that were beating Jesus as he carried his cross up the hill. So, I mean, I'll tell you what, you know, Rick in that movie, it showed that how good of an actor he is, because that might be one of the sweetest people. I mean, you know, it may rest in peace, but he might have been one of the sweetest people ever.
Nice.
Because Rick, we had a wonderful time doing this, and we both felt awful about the scene we were casted to. we had this guilt, like our families don't really understand acting.
Right.
You know, when they see us do something like that, they're like, hey, you aren't raised that way.
That's so, too funny.
So yeah, Rick, you know, you see him in Over the Top, and he's a menacing character.
For sure.
But really great guy. Really, he was a wonderful, wonderful guy.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, but, you know, I wanted to point out a couple of things I was thinking about the fact that Rocky came out in 76, which... You know, most of the Stallone fanatics are probably not 40 or over.
Right.
But in 76, that was the bicentennial for the United States, for America's bicentennial. And
right.
Everyone in show business was put their stamp. Are you okay?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. you're breathing some of that Detroit air. Stop it.
That's right.
but everybody in 76 was trying to, you know, merge onto that freeway to get to leave their mark during the bicentennial.
Right.
And, you know, people don't realize that Rocky came out at like Thanksgiving, like the 21st of November.
Right.
And in order to qualify for the Academy Awards that year, you have to remain in the theaters for at least 2 weeks.
Right.
And they only had 4 weeks till Christmas morning to qualify and get enough attention. And in those 4 weeks, now that you got to think about it, the 48 weeks, they're not even on the radar.
Yeah.
And in four weeks, they gross like $125 million, which means they're throwing every theater. And it's the number one movie of the year. And to put it in perspective, I mean, the younger listeners are probably not going to get this, but there were some incredible movies out that year because everybody was moving their chips all in to try to, you know, leave their mark. But you had All the President's Men. Yeah, you had Silver Streak. You had Star Is Born. King Kong, you know, Dina De Laurentiis put out King Kong in the remake.
Right.
And Rocky comes along and, you know, on the fourth turn and just takes the lead like a horse and just takes off. And Rocky sweeps America.
Yeah.
And just beats everybody. You know, I mean, I worked with James Earl Jones, and we actually won an Emmy in 92, and I had a chance to talk with him, and I'll tell you, that voice, you know, his voice and Morgan Freeman's, one of brothers, you get a chance to talk to either one of those guys in your life, you're one up. But we spent an afternoon just chatting about things, and I told him that as a kid I was really bummed that Rocky lost in the first film.
Right.
And he turned my shoulders with both his hands and he said, listen to me, Rocky didn't lose. Rocky won. And I looked at him and he said, yo, yeah, he won. Trust me on that. He had just gotten done doing Field of Dreams. I thought he was going to break off into that, oh, they will come, Jack. Listen, they will come if you build it. But he said, you know, you got to look at it like Rocky actually won. And, you know, I mean, if it hadn't been for that Chuck Wepner fight against Ali,
yeah,
he may not even know who Rocky is.
You know?
I mean, you know, Chuck Wepner did what, you know, I mean, it was exactly based on what Chuck Wepner did against Muhammad Ali, just hanging in there.
Yep.
You know? So, I just wanted to impress upon people that Rocky really showed up in the ninth inning.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden won the game. I mean, it's just phenomenal. You know, it's just remarkable what they did.
Well, and that movie really spoke to the sort of the American dream, which felt, you know, fell right in there with, you know, the bicentennial and, you know, and it just, it was really perfect timing, you know, for that movie. And like you said, to come in the ninth inning was just amazing. It was just amazing, you know, to come.
Yeah, and the turbulence America was going through.
Yeah.
With, you know, lines at the gas stations and problems with OPEC, and I mean, we had getting our oil into the country, and I mean, like I said, the younger listeners are not going to be able to relate to this.
Because, right.
You know, kids can make gasoline in their garage if they need to.
Right.
But back then, people were literally pushing their cars up for $2 worth of gas.
Yeah.
Because that's what the limit was, and meanwhile, the Middle East was choking us out. We had a hostage situation by the time Rocky II came out, and again, we needed hope. You know, I mean, you know, Rocky and Rocky II, you know, really saved the attitude of a great deal of America where we could see the light.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, Rocky and Rocky II were way ahead of the 1980 Olympic hockey team that made us proud again. I mean, you got to give Stallone credit. First of all, to put this draft together, you know, they just auctioned off the original handwritten script in New York. I forget what it went for, and I thought, boy, if I had that kind of money, I would have loved to have had that. But I mean, he put that together, and he wrote it in 3 days, and it was raw.
Yeah.
But you know, Chartoff and Winkler and those guys, there's meat and potatoes here. There's something to work with.
Right.
You know, and then they polished it up. A lot of people don't know that the studio, I mean, Universal, was not crazy about the idea of this guy from Lords of Flatbush playing Rocky. You know who they originally thought Stallone was?
Yeah, they thought he was Perry King.
Perry King, from the really good-looking guy from Lords of Flatbush. There was no Google, there was no Yelp or anything. Nobody
right.
was on the computer comparing images. It was basically index cards and stuff. How you start in Lords of Flatbush. They weren't thinking it was Stallone. They were thinking it was Perry King.
Yep.
and all of a sudden now he shows up and they're like, oh boy, this is not going to go well. But they wanted Clint Eastwood.
Yeah.
To play Rocky, and yeah, that I don't know. I mean, it would have been quite a different spin, but Eastwood, you know, I don't know if it was revenge or if he wanted to prove something, but he came out with Every Which Way But Loose,
right,
to show he could play a boxer, a fighter, and he wanted to show that he could play a raw fighter. But Stallone has it's so hard to not be, you know, just completely entranced by him.
Right.
I mean, there's a handful of geniuses in the last 100 years in the entertainment business. I mean, there's Spielberg. You know, there's Michael Caine is a great actor, but Stallone writes. He writes screenplays. He creates things. I mean, Michael Caine is great at taking your script and converting it into a believable character. Ben Kingsley, same thing. But Stallone is at the top of that mountain with the absolute best of all the best.
Yep.
I mean, you know, I don't know if anyone else in the history of show business has had a number one film in five consecutive decades.
Right.
You know, Stallone has done that. I mean, you know, I mean, Burt Reynolds and Stallone were the most popular actors in the world 5 years in a row.
Yeah.
And they were almost back to back, so it was inevitable that they would work together, you know, Driven, and they had to find a project for the two of them to work on, because I mean that's box office power.
Right.
But people don't realize the real greatness of Stallone. I mean, he's in his 70s and he's still, I mean, he got a Golden Globe last year.
Yeah.
And now he's got Creed 2 coming out. I'm not crazy about the release date, because you know, you release in February. The voting, you know, I'm on the voting committee. By the time the Academy Awards get voted on, it's October, November, and
yeah,
people tend to start forgetting, you know, after a few months. Usually around October, early November, that's when those films that are being lined up and groomed for you know, Academy Awards and stuff, that's when they come out.
Right.
And I'm kind of bummed, unless they're expecting to have a 4 or 5 month run in the theater, which would be awesome as far as I'm concerned. I'm excited about Creed 2. You know?
Well, my understanding is that the last I read on it was that they were starting filming in February, late February, early March, and that they were expecting a December release.
Oh, are they going to go for next year? A year from now?
Yeah, 2018.
Oh, yeah, fantastic! Oh, because yep. I had gotten an alert, and it said it was a February 2018 release. And then it's done. They're basically just syncing up the music. And
oh, like, no, they haven't.
That's a long time of year.
Yeah, they haven't even started filming yet. Apparently, they're going to start filming late February.
Okay, so that's the start of the filming. Okay,
yeah,
so good.
Yep.
So that was fake news. Apologize to everybody.
That was fake news.
I got this email. People were saying, why would they release it in February?
Yeah.
And most of the country is like starting to stay warm in their house.
Yep.
And I'm thinking, why would they do that? But yeah, December makes a whole lot of sense because at least you're Golden Globe worthy right away. And then come Christmas, you may get a shot at the Academy Awards.
Absolutely.
And I would love to see him win. You know, it broke my heart when he didn't win for Rocky. You know, Rocky wins 3 Academy Awards.
Yeah.
All completely justified. But it broke my heart that, you know, first of all, the guy from Network passes away. Great performance.
Yep.
But it wasn't a performance like Rocky.
No.
It wasn't that kind of performance. But it was like when we voted on the kid that played the Joker that passed away.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a landslide, and he was great. You know, Heath Ledger.
Yeah.
You know. He's not going to get another shot at a nomination. But you sit there and say, okay, everybody put all their chips on that because, you know, and that's what happened with the situation with Network. And all of a sudden, you know, Rocky got shortchanged.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, you know, it didn't sit well with me as a 15-year-old. And I think it still kind of bothers me because Network is not that movie. It's not.
No.
You know, it just isn't. And, you know, the other thing I was gonna say to you is like, 75, the biggest movie of the year was Jaws.
Right.
Now, you know, Spielberg, it was genius. But, I mean, let's face it. It was kind of you know, a little bit low quality, you know, sci-fi, you know, a little bit of, you know, they didn't really have a lot of special effects to me.
For sure.
You know, yeah, I mean, it didn't have that magic. It just had that fear. But, you know, you release Rocky, and you got people going from afraid to go in the water to completely fearless of going in the gym.
Right.
You know, I mean, it was like, you know, all the workout classes and the music, and the overhead was Rocky music.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, as a matter of fact, I'll tell you, I had a pretty good sized ceremony, about 150, 200 at my wedding. And what we did was we queued up for the, when they say we'd like to introduce Mr. you know, and we queued up Rocky II Overture 14 seconds in.
Nice.
And we had a big speaker there, you know, wireless, and my nephew hit the button, and that was basically our introduction to everybody as you know, a married couple was our Rocky music. True story. I mean, it's such motivating, feel good music. And I was like, oh my God, that made the day that much better.
Oh, no doubt. You
know, yeah. And I was going to talk to you about a couple of things. You know, not that many people know this story. And I got this from Carl Weathers. I got this directly from him. Is when they were filming Rocky, they were very impressed with how well the prosthetic of the swollen face and the broken nose.
Yeah.
He was wearing a prosthetic on his face. They were so impressed with how seamless it looked on his face.
Right.
That they actually went to dinner one night after doing some of the shooting for the fight scenes. And they brought it with them to play with it over dinner. Then they paid the bill and left. And it wasn't until they got back to the hotel that they realized that nobody picked it up off the table. True story.
Wow.
And they went berserk calling each other's room to see who had the prosthetic. And no one had picked it up. And the busboy had thrown it out, and they literally emptied the dumpster behind the restaurant to find the prosthetic. So when he did Rocky II and he pulls the prosthetic off doing that commercial, and he rips it off his face and throws it, that was actually the metaphor of what they did at the restaurant when they left it on the
table. Nice.
And the busboy cleaned off the table, and he had one of the most prized possessions in all of movie making history.
Oh man!
More valuable than Evander Holyfield's ear. This was the crown jewel of the prosthetics in any fight scene in any movie ever. And I was like, wow, they literally emptied the whole dumpster day.
Wow.
Before the garbage truck, if the garbage truck had come along, it would have been a lot of trouble. So yeah, I was gonna tell you that's like one of those little known facts. And the other thing I'd like to share with the listeners is Burt Young and Burgess Meredith actually never met while filming Rocky.
Really?
True story.
Wow.
They actually never met while filming Rocky. They never met at all. They never even met at the premiere.
Wow.
They were invited to the Dinah Shore show, which, like, again, it was a talk show. It was like the Jimmy Fallon or something. I'm trying to put it in perspective so people. But Dinah Shore was this daytime talk show host, and she was very pretty and very popular. And she brought the cast on, and while she was meeting the cast, she realized that Burgess Meredith and Burt Young shook hands and began chatting. And she didn't understand. She didn't understand why they didn't just take a seat and let her do the interview. And Burgess said, I've never met him.
Wow.
And she looked and she said, you guys just met now? And he said, yeah, we've never met. We had a scene where we came close and I went back to my dressing room and he entered as I exited and that's as close as we came. We never actually met. Like, oh my God. They're on this thing for months and Burgess Meredith and Burt Young never meet. And I'm thinking, wow.
That's wild.
How amazing is that? That like how do they avoid each other, and I got a lot of shared stuff with Carl. I mean, that was to me, I was so thrilled. I don't know if I told you, but I actually was working with Carl on November 21st, 1996.
Oh wow.
We were at Stu Siegel Studios doing Silk Stockings, and Carl was directing me. And
nice.
All of a sudden, we got word that the gate was holding back the media. And so I didn't know what was happening because I'm kind of focused on doing my acting. I'm kind of,
Yeah.
And Carl looked at me and he goes, you're the biggest fan I ever met of Rocky, but I'm going to do this interview and I want you to stay clear because you're going to keep them talking forever. And I said, what's going on? And he said, today is the 20th anniversary of the release of Rocky.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, we're working together on the 20th anniversary. He goes, yeah. He said, we'll take a couple of pictures and everything, but the media is coming in here. They want to talk. And I'm like, wow, how cool is that? When I watched Rocky, I would never imagine that 20 years later, I'd be, on the anniversary working with Carl Weathers.
Right.
But he kind of filled me in on a lot of the metaphors and stuff that, that Stallone uses when he creates a script or creates a scene and that kind of thing.
Right.
And everybody remembers the scene with the legs in Rocky One.
Oh yeah.
But the interesting thing is that he wanted those eggs to fill the glass halfway, so that Rocky always looked at the glass as half full.
Right.
Right. And then being a New Yorker. Stallone's a New Yorker, and he has that scene when he starts jogging through downtown Philadelphia, and the newspaper delivery guy throwing the packs of papers off.
Right.
But the symbolism there was, he's all alone, starts spreading the news.
Yep.
Yeah. And I thought, boy, all that stuff you miss all that stuff,
Right.
You just come on, So and I found out that Burt Young wasn't Stallone's first choice for the part of Paulie.
Oh wow!
He actually wanted you know who Kevin Conway is?
Yeah,
yeah. He was in Paradise Alley and Fist. And
yep.
He's a little leprechaun looking guy, a little Irish angry looking guy. He played Vince Doyle in Fist.
Yeah.
He wanted a Napoleon. Irishman, an angry little Irishman to play Paulie, real chip on his shoulder, kind of shorter than the rest of the people, just kind of this whole attitude about him. But the studio, had seen Burt turn in some pretty impressive roles. He did a Vegas movie, and it was critically regarded as like one of the best performances of the year.
Right.
So they were like, okay, he can do this. And then they turned out to be lifelong friends.
Nice.
You know, but Stallone did not forget, you know, Vince. Vince Doyle, you get Kevin Conroy, because he ended up bringing him into other projects, and you know, he had a great career in his own right.
Yeah.
That would have been his choice. You know, if you think about what he looks like, that would have been his choice for Paulie.
That's wild.
Isn't that crazy? You know, I mean, it would have been a much different movie. Paulie was very lovable. I don't think Kevin Conroy would have been quite as lovable as Paulie. Paulie's like big angry teddy bear.
Yeah. You know? But I think of Kevin Conroy, I mean, obviously he was in Fist, but I always think of him as Stitch in Paradise Alley, and he was such a jerk.
Yeah. But I mean, I love his portrayal of Vince Doyle in Fist.
Yeah.
Was obviously, you know, I mean, let's lay it out. It's Jimmy Hoffa's right hand man.
Yep.
And you know, that's who he was portraying, and I thought he did a great job of you know, when he's saying, "You're whistling past the graveyard, kid."
Yep.
Yeah, you're whistling past the graveyard. I told you, you know. And he said, "You're going to need help. You're going to need push." And I thought, this little guy has all this power, and he has a scene in Fist when, you know, the company is fighting back and they're striking and there's gunshots, and somebody shoots at Vince Doyle and misses, and it ricochets off the car.
Yeah.
And Vince Doyle looks at one of his gunmen and literally points. And as soon as his arm extends, the man he points at is dead. I mean, he doesn't even have a gun on him.
Right.
He just quickly points, and it's almost like the bullet came from his index finger. And I thought, wow, that is. I mean, you know, Norman Jewison is an incredible director. I mean, but that I thought personally, I thought this should have done, you know, much better. I mean, it came in, I think it came in 25th or 26th in 78. I think people that are Stallone fans would do themselves right by watching that period piece. Same year, you know, Fist comes out, the Buddy Holly story comes out.
Oh, yeah.
Nearly as well as this.
Right.
It came in like 25th of the year, but yet Gary Busey gets, you know, Academy Award nomination for portrayal of Buddy Holly.
Yeah.
I'm like, Fist is a better movie.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a better movie. And I think people just kind of wanted to watch the pendulum swing the other way. The other thing I was going to tell you is I used to watch, because there wasn't any recording anything back then. You couldn't record. It wasn't, you
know, right. The ability to record
stuff. So when I heard that Stallone was going to be on TV for the reason, I was making I made sure I was home at that time on that channel watching. And I remember at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, he was doing an interview with Howard Cosell, and he was trying to explain to Howard Cosell how they had done Rocky. They hadn't done Rocky II yet, obviously. But,
right.
But they had done then Rocky, and he was trying to explain to him how they treated it like a dance. So when he would punch, as long as they were lined up with the camera and they weren't horizontal, they were vertical, then as long as you snap your head back, the assumption in your mind is the fist hit the face, and that made the head snap back.
Right.
And so every time they got lined up straight on with the camera, they were able to throw their punches and react.
Yep.
So 45 seconds before they're going into a commercial, Howard Cosell asked them, but 45 seconds, if you watch your watch for 45 seconds, that's a long time.
Yeah.
So they immediately got up and tried to show how they did it, and they were trying to repeat. You know, but 45 seconds, they started getting a little winded, and they're in suits, and finally Carl started acting like he was losing his arms and he was getting tired, and he started to fall down, and Stallone fell on top of him. And I found out later that was the moment Stallone realized that for Rocky II, the two of them will punch themselves out and fall at the end of the fight.
Nice.
And the person with that much more strength in their body, that extra atom will get up and prevail, you know? And, I mean, I don't know. Have you been to a premiere of a Rocky movie?
Only Rocky Balboa.
Okay. So 2006. Okay.
Yep.
I actually was in Toronto for the Canadian premiere of Rocky II.
Oh, and nice.
I got online at the Uptown Theater, which was one of these older theaters that holds like 2,000 or 2,500 people.
Nice.
And I'm standing in line, and I'm about a dozen people from the front. And we're standing in line all day, and the line went all the way down the block because they didn't let you buy the tickets in advance like you do on Fandango
right.
and stuff now. So you literally had to wait by the box office to buy your ticket to go in. And I'm standing in line with, you know, a couple of thousand Rocky fans. And we originally started by doing one line, you know, one line trade-off. So we'd be like, take it to the table. And we, you know, we do the next line. And we were remembering scenes. And then finally somebody said, the very first Rocky, you know, you really hit good, man, which was Spider Rico. And we did the whole movie while waiting in line for 10 hours. He's in line all day to go in and see Rocky II. And these guys, everyone knew the script from Rocky I.
Oh,
and this
wow.
theater, this theater had an orchestra pit and balconies. And during the fight scene, I'm in like the 7th row or 10th row. And I was with my girlfriend at the time. And people began getting out of their seats and inching down the aisles to yell at the screen. So literally, I thought people were going to start falling in the orchestra pit. And they were chanting, Rocky, Rocky. And afterwards, I found out from the businesses outside the theater, they could hear us in their businesses outside the theater across the street. They could hear us chanting inside the theater.
Wow.
And I was like, the energy in that place and the cheering, and nobody wanted to leave. It was almost like we were expecting Stallone to come from behind the curtain. And I mean, it was such a thrill. But, you know, and then my girlfriend looked at me and she said, you understand that he had to win. Otherwise, why would they make a second one?
Right.
I looked at her and I said, not necessarily. He should have won the first time. But I mean, that, I'll tell you what, that feeling of being around true Rocky fans who are willing to spend the whole day standing online
yep.
to, you know, to see their hero. I mean, nothing like it. I've been to many premieres. I've been to openings. I've been to Broadway openings. I have never been to anything like a rock.
Right.
I mean, it's just, it's better than a rock concert. It's better than anything. You know, it's the best thing in the world. It's the ultimate high, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then I was going to tell you a few years later that this was completely by fluke. I was watching something I was kind of curious about, which they were doing, Best Bouncer in America competition.
Oh wow!
And I thought well, that's kind of, you know, and the you know, it consisted of being able to throw somebody out of the bar from the furthest distance, so they didn't hit the floor from when you threw them, and they go out the door, and it was just all this silliness. But the guy that won it had this big mohawk and all these gold chains and this sleeveless shirt, and I thought, well, this guy is. I mean, this guy's like a cartoon character. And I had no idea Stallone happened to be watching this very low-rated show at the same time, and he's like, I got to get that guy.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, originally, as you know, Ernie Shavers was they were trying to get an actual boxer
right.
to do Rocky III, and Ernie Shavers, not an actor, but an incredible boxer. I mean, he hits like he just got hit by a car. And, I mean, he hit guys that folded over sideways, and they just wanted to go home to their mommy.
Right.
But Ernie didn't know how to pull his punches.
Right.
He didn't know how to make it look like he was hitting. And he hit Stallone, and I think he broke a rib. And his producers were like, okay, this guy's not going to work. In 15 weeks of him punching you, you'll be dead.
That's right.
Ernie Shavers, like, you know, was a man of steel.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he, you know, but Mr. T worked out perfectly. I mean, it was just, he was exactly what he was looking for.
Yeah.
The fans are probably unaware that when I worked with Carl, he was getting ready to go to Florida to the Everglades to film a movie with Hulk Hogan.
Oh yeah,
and I said, oh, how funny is that? Apollo and Hulk, that's good. And he said, I'll tell you something. And he said Hulk was almost not in Rocky III.
Huh.
He said Sly left him a message at one of his wrestler matches, and Hulk was completely convinced that his wrestling buddies were playing a joke on him.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And so he kept showing up on tour doing the wrestling and not realizing that these were real messages from Stallone. Stallone had to actually show up. And because he said, yes, Sylvester Stallone's looking for me. Why would he be looking for me? And he only wanted him for that role.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just amazing how these things fell in place.
Yep.
You know, over the years, and how fortunate we are as fans that Sly had this vision. I mean, yeah, he's just like from another planet. You know, he's just so far ahead of us. You know, I mean, I gotta wonder what other superpowers he may have. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, he's so in tune with the everyman. You know, and I think that's like he brings that kind of element to most of his roles where you can really relate, you know, and he's just good at getting at the heart of things. And I think that's what makes him such a great writer and an actor and a producer and director as well.
Yeah. I mean, he seems to know the common denominator that people can sit there and say, yeah, you know, I would either like to be that guy. I'd like to get out of this and do that, or
yeah,
you know, I could root for this guy. This is a guy that I could like and root for.
For sure.
You know? And I mean, you look at very unsuccessful Paradise Alley.
Yeah.
You could see what he was trying to do with it, but if you look at the credits, there's almost nobody else's name repeated in the credits, but he's in there like 15 times.
Yeah.
he sang the title song. He directed it, he wrote it, he starred in a screenplay, he choreographed the wrestling scenes. I mean, he did everything but serve snacks to the extras. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, he's got Armando Sante and Ann Archer, and that's the other thing is the Kid Salami.
Yeah,
I absolutely believed that he had great appeal.
Oh yeah,
I thought we'd see him again and again, and I don't think I've seen him since. I mean, I don't know if he's still acting or what.
But. Yeah, I did an interview with him not too long ago.
Oh, you did?
And
what's the story?
And he's he's only been in a handful of movies. He went back to he had his boxing career, and Stallone managed him briefly there in the 80s. And then after that, he was in a couple of low budget movies. But then he just never. I don't think he ever really had good representation. And so he kind of just went back to he started a gym, opened up a gym, and started training young guys. And that's what he's still doing to this day out in Texas. So
He's in Texas.
Yeah.
Okay, because I thought he's a big, strong, good looking guy.
Yeah, and he's such a nice guy. I mean, he's just the sweetest guy. I mean, he actually during the interview, I got him to sing the song that he sung to the bird in the movie.
How did you get him to do that?
It was just a one. I mean, he was the sweetest guy. I mean, I left him a message on Facebook Messenger, and I wasn't even convinced that it was a real profile, but I took a chance. And he didn't message me back. He called me, and we sat and talked for an hour. This was not an interview. This was just a regular conversation. And then he goes, I prefer to talk to somebody rather than message them. He goes, so I can get a feel, you know, what they're like. He goes, so yeah, he goes, keep my number. Anytime you want to talk, whether it's regular or interview, let me know, you know?
Oh, wow.
So yeah, he's a really cool guy. Really cool.
That is great to hear. That is really great to hear.
Yeah.
That's somebody I think would probably be very appealing to spend like social time with.
Absolutely.
You know, and you could tell that he has that softness about him.
Yep.
And I just thought, oh yeah, we'll probably see this guy around. You know, he'll be doing a lot of stuff, and then it just didn't happen. But he's probably happy to be with his gym and you know, doing his thing. In Texas, you know.
He is actually. I should give you his hookup because he's looking for an agent, and he's looking to get into movies, whether it's choreographing fight scenes or small bit parts. I mean, it's like he's looking to get back into it, but he's had trouble finding a good agent. So, you know, maybe the two of you need to meet.
we might need to have a sit down because I'm actually getting ready to go into production on something, and it's a cop project And I think we're actually going to be doing it L.A., but I haven't gotten confirmation yet.
Nice.
I'll keep you posted on that. I'm very excited about it. But
no doubt.
I mean, most of the time, I either play you know, gangster or mafia or cop. You know, I mean,
yeah.
I have that look. It's a position of authority and one side or the other of the law. You know.
That's right.
You know, I was gonna say to you is I was talking to a friend of mine. Actually, he's probably this cop thing with me. A really fine actor, Randy Davison, and I was talking to him about he's about my age, so he's familiar with the whole Rocky thing. He's not a Rocky fanatic like I am, but he's familiar with it all. And he said, you know, it's interesting. He said, he does Rocky, then he does Fist. And Fist is a fine film. They had to think Fist would do better because you just got done unloading the bank with Star Wars the year before.
Yeah.
So you got Rocky, you got Star Wars. You know, we're probably in pretty good shape here. So we'll come out with Fist and we'll be okay. And it turns out that's the year that Grease is released.
Yeah.
And it makes like $200 million, you know. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, I just sit there. There's no way to time this. There's no way to figure out what, you know, what's going to work. I'm sure.
Yeah.
You know, and you and I have talked about this where Rocky, there was a time right before Rocky was released theatrically where Universal was going to bill it as a love story.
Right.
And put it on TV as a movie of the week.
Yep.
And it wouldn't have even gotten a theatrical release. It would have been a one and done on TV.
Ugh.
Because, I mean, could you imagine? Like, first of all, Rocky was made on a shoestring budget. I mean, not too many people know the exact numbers. I happen to know the numbers.
Right.
And Rocky's made for $898,000.
Yeah.
And that includes all the special camera angles and everything at the Spectrum, all of that stuff. $898,000. That's huge money. I mean, you know, I'm sure that Star Wars spent more than that on snacks.
Right.
Yeah. But, I mean, they got $898,000, and then they approached Bill Conti because they said that the music is going to be so key
yep.
to the motivation of this film, and you're going to need an orchestra. And he said, okay, now, I know Bill Conti was interviewed, and he said he was thinking $125,000 or $140,000 to put an orchestra together for them. And they gave him $25,000.
Yeah.
To put like 60-piece orchestra together to make some of the most iconic music ever in a film. And I mean, they made it up to him in Rocky II. But I mean, yeah, he's sitting there when he finds out his budget is $25,000, that means he's got musicians that are gonna have to work for $300 a week.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the ones that stayed and did it, believed in the project.
That's right.
And the ones that failed, I'm sure, regret it every day of their life. I mean, most fans of Rocky, you know, don't know that that there were crew members that thought Rocky was such garbage. They thought it was such a bad movie that they insisted on the names being taken out of the credits.
Right.
And then they tried to sue later.
Imagine that.
Quote Stallone, good luck with that.
Yeah.
I mean, they fought to get their names out of it because they didn't want their names to be a part of it. They didn't want to be associated with Rocky. And then they find out it's this incredible film. And now they hired lawyers to get their names put back in.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, true story. I mean, could you imagine? Like you could just shut your mouth. You worked on it. You know, you work on good projects. You work on bad projects. Just leave your name out there.
Yeah.
And these guys were like, no, take our names off the credits. I don't want anybody to think I worked on this thing. And I'm thinking, why? Why not? I mean, you got to work with Stallone.
You know, they've kicked themselves every day since then about that.
Every day. Because I'm sure, from what I know of Stallone, and I'll tell you what, you know, if I ever got a chance to work with Stallone, that would, I mean, you know, I would die a happy man.
Right.
But I mean, I'm sure, from what I know of Stallone, and you know, the way he will stand up for himself. I mean, you know, when, you know, like when Chuck Wepner, you know, came after him for money for creating Rocky, supposedly Stallone created Rocky.
Right.
You know, Wepner just happened to be standing there in front of Muhammad Ali getting hit.
Right.
But I mean, Stallone created Rocky, and there's no getting around that. But then he was at his handout, you know, trying to say that, you know, he's deserving money. I think if I know what I know about Stallone, I don't think those people ever got their names in the credits. I'm gonna put that out there, because I would have trouble believing that he would sit there, go, all right, you know. Unfortunately, those same people probably didn't get to work on Rocky 2 and 3 and 4.
That's right.
You know, and 4 was, I think 4 was the greatest Wednesday opening of any film in film history.
Yeah,
yeah. They had the most success. And the only reason they released it on a Wednesday is because that was the 9-year anniversary of the release of Rocky.
Right.
Rocky IV was the 9-year anniversary of the release of Rocky, and I think that's why they did it. You know, I mean, it's been quite a path.
Absolutely.
You know, and when you look around, you know, Rocky has been like this train, just pushing forward, and everything in its way just kind of moves. You know, and if you want to get on board, otherwise you're going to get run over, because it just keeps coming. I'm so grateful that John Avildsen, director from Rocky 1 and 5, in 5, the plan was to kill off Rocky.
Yeah.
I'm so glad they didn't do that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm so glad that he lives on and we get to enjoy, you know, as he's gotten older and you know, and Creed, and I mean, you know, I'm so grateful that they didn't do that, because that would have been terrible. I mean, that would have been awful.
You know, a lot of people give Rocky V a ton of bad press. I personally, I love that movie, and even more so, I love the work print of that movie. But I've always said that killing off Rocky would have been a huge mistake, even before, you know, there was an idea of Rocky Balboa. You know, but certainly since then, it's like, yeah, we would have lost out on so much had they,
oh yeah,
you know, God,
you're exactly right. We would have, as fans, people, you know, the entertainment industry would have, I mean, it's hard for that to permeate your brain and think how much we would have missed out on,
yeah,
you know, had they done that. And I was like, oh boy,
yep.
You know, and I understand, you know, them, you know, killing off Adrian. You know,
yeah.
I get it, because, I mean, I think Talia, you know, and to the fans out there of Rocky, I'll tell you, you know, everyone knows Adrian.
Right.
Know, everyone knows Adrian. No way you, everyone knows Adrian as Rocky, but people don't remember really that Talia Shire had just been in what was considered to be two of maybe the greatest films ever made.
Yep.
In Godfather and Godfather 2. And she ends up doing Rocky, and people really don't remember that she turned out an amazing set of performances.
Absolutely.
With Jimmy Kahn and Godfather. And you sit there and you go, wow, you know, that kind of got forgotten.
Yep.
You know, and I'll let the fans in on a little known fact. Everyone remembers in Rocky when Rocky brings her up to his apartment and he would just love to kiss her.
Yep.
Remember? And he's kind of got her cornered by the door. And, you know, in this day and age, that would be creepy, but back then it was kind of okay. But he's trying to make a run for it, and he like blocks her out, you know, and he said, I just want to kiss you. And if you don't want to kiss me back, that's fine.
Yep.
And she's turning her head away not to kiss him. And then she finally kisses him. Do you know why she was doing that?
Yeah, she had the flu.
She had the flu, and she was afraid to give it to him. And
yeah.
She gave it to him. She had the flu, and he was sitting there trying to figure out why her head kept moving, and she said, I'm sick with the flu. They're like, wow, like that worked so well.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, the scene after Rocky goes to the Spectrum to just kind of look at everything. Nobody's there, and he's looking at the poster, and he says, you know, Mr. Jurgens, the poster's wrong. You know, remember he's wearing white shorts, and he said, it doesn't really matter. You're going to give us a great show. And that's when it dawns on him that he's part of just the show, and he's a pawn in this.
Yeah.
And he realizes, you know, that scene when he comes back to the apartment was almost not shot.
Yep.
Yeah, because the studio didn't want to pay the overtime.
Yep.
For the crew. And he said, and if you watch that scene, Talia Shire actually flubs a line.
Yeah.
And they were allowed one shot at doing that. One take.
Yep.
It was done one take. And she flubbed her line a little, and they pushed through it. And he said, that's the whole point of the movie. We don't do that scene. Where are we? And they must have been thinking, you know, you're kind of a pain in the ass, kid. you just got here.
But it's such a pivotal scene. I mean, it's like,
it's so important.
Man.
And I wonder how the studio didn't see that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so important for him to come to that realization.
Yep.
And realize, you know what? And now the best he could hope for is to leave his mark in some other way, but he's not going to win this thing.
Yeah.
You know? Now, according to Carl, they thought it was important in Rocky II to actually motivate his character, you know, method acting.
Yeah.
To actually motivate his character to really dislike the character Rocky genuinely. Like,
right,
this real inner kind of almost hatred. And so they actually kept their distance on Rocky II, and Carl loved the fact that he came up with hitting him in the head after that first round.
Yeah.
Like, what a punk. And I mean, it worked, but I mean, that whole thing, you know, women like, boy, it's like, everybody likes, he shouldn't be in the same ring with you. You know, they just kept embedding that. And when he comes time, they knew where the punches, they knew the rehearsal, but he had such venom.
Yeah.
By the time they're not ready to do this, which is why Stallone allowed him to hit him.
Yep.
So when you see the slow motion and he's actually getting hit, you can see the skin on his face moving in slow motion. You can tell.
Yeah.
And you know, you're using 8-ounce gloves, which could, you know, rearrange teeth if need be.
That's right. And,
I mean, true. I mean, and he's taking these shots. I mean, personally, I thought his hair was a little too long in Rocky II, but he was kind of a rock star at the time.
Right.
I mean, you know, I'm watching it, and I fought as a candidate for the Olympic boxing team in 82 and 83. And I remember we used to not want our hair to be anywhere near our eyes because it might flick in and may poke you in the eye.
Right.
If you blind it for a moment, that might be it. But I mean, he was kind of cool, you know, the big sweaty hair and all that. But I mean, you see him getting hit, and you see the sweat getting jarred off his head. You sit there and you go, okay, those are real.
Yeah.
And he didn't want there to be any doubt that this, you know, these shots were real. It's kind of like what he did in Creed with Michael B. Jordan. There's a scene when they're practicing the fight scene on an early thing, and he had told the guy he was fighting, he told him to hit Michael B. Jordan.
Right.
He said, everybody gets christened.
Yep.
And Michael B. Jordan said he felt his jaw for a couple of days. He said he caught me on a punch that was supposed to be pulled. And once he hit me, I went down. And I looked, and everybody began applauding. And he didn't understand what was going on. And Stallone said, you've now been christened. You're part of the group. Good for you.
That's right.
Everybody gets hit. Everybody gets hit. You know.
Yeah, he got laid out pretty good in that one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, you in Creed, you know, I think you and I spoke about this on Facebook one time. There's a scene in Creed that is continuous during a fight scene for 7 minutes.
Yeah,
it goes from round to round, and the camera is clearly not cutting.
Yep,
and you can't match that up because you look at the background, you know, the extras and stuff, and you say, okay, this is just going.
Yep.
And I'm thinking, boy, when I do a scene, you know, we get 30 seconds or 40 seconds all at once, we're in good shape because so much can go wrong every 10 seconds.
Yeah.
And we, you know, well, I mean, my wife once watched me do a 4-second scene for a movie for the Cannes Film Festival, and she watched 4 seconds. It's a 4-second scene. Well, we were doing it for 4 hours.
Oh.
And, you know, it was lighting. It was a truck going by. You know, we were inside a building. It was just, it was a shadow, and it was the pace of it, and the delivery, and everything was off by a little bit. And she was on Skype upright when we started. And then she was horizontal asleep by the time. The director kind of waved his arms at me and he goes, should I just shut that off? I should have been cold. And when you watch the movie, we're the only ones that knew what it took to get those 4 seconds.
Right.
We're the only ones. Nobody in the audience was like, wow, that's the greatest 4 seconds. Nobody else realized what we went through.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, as an actor, I watched them do that scene and I kept waiting for the cut. And I'm thinking, wow, they're in the corner and they got a cut and they didn't cut and they went to the next round. And I was like, and then they go to the corner of Michael B. Jordan. And I was like, wait a second. This must take weeks to get down to the point where they're going to get this thing to go seamless. I mean, it reminded me of like Birdman. A couple years ago, had all those scenes that were in and out of the building, out on the balcony, on the rooftop, and inside the Broadway stage. And I'm like, wow, these scenes, you know, you really have to rehearse those scenes forever.
Absolutely.
To get them to work. And then personally, I don't know that audiences appreciate it as much as actors appreciate it. So I don't know that, you know, the paying audience sits there and goes, wow. You know, when I make my dinner, I just do it on one fell swoop. You know, I never take a break to go get a drink of water or anything. I just keep going.
That's
you
right.
Know, I don't think they realize what it takes to do this. But, you know, you're dealing with Stallone. And as I understand it, he gets on a project and it's 9 to 11 months, clear your schedule, and it's all day, all night. It's like you said, you went to the premiere of Rocky Balboa, right?
Yeah.
Scene when he puts one arm up in the air and it's snowing.
Yep.
They had filmed like 17 or 19 hours.
Right.
That same day. You know the story?
Yeah.
Go ahead. You tell it.
It was the very, very end of the day, and it was they'd been waiting for, you know, they were trying to, you know, there'd been a forecast of snow and things like that. And then he said all of a sudden the sky just opened up and it was so perfect. And so again, that followed the especially the Rocky series all the way through. Every movie, there was always something like that, you know, that just changed everything. You know, I mean, it's like, and there's a lot of little things, like even going back to Talia Shire, you know, they originally wanted Kerry Snodgrass to play Adrian.
Yeah.
And there was a financial dispute. And so they went looking elsewhere. So, I mean, can you imagine how different that would have been, you know, if it hadn't been Talia Shire? My God, you know?
You know, I nothing against Snodgrass, but it just wouldn't have been as good.
No.
I mean, I'm just going to say it. It just wouldn't have been a good. I mean, you know, they really captured lightning in a bottle.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, they really, like, something more was going on. I mean, you're talking about, you know, somebody who really was at the end of their rope.
Yeah.
In life. And I mean, I had no idea that Stallone actually was sleeping on the Port Authority bus station floor with other homeless people. And he slept there for weeks.
Yeah.
And he had nothing. I mean, you know, and my whole life, I mean, you know the story about his dog, about Butkus, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Now, I mean, he needed money and he sells his dog, this guy, for $25.
Yeah.
And then he, you know, his life turns around and he wants the dog back. It's his dog. That's like your child. And the guy, you know, basically held the dog hostage.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, I would have just given it to him. I was just giving the dog back to him. I would have just been like, look, I was holding it for you. You know?
Well, you know who that guy was, right?
Oh, no. Tell me.
Jimmy Gambina.
The short guy in Rocky?
Yeah. Yeah.
So he got, oh my goodness.
The deal was he wanted $10,000 and a role in Rocky. According to Jim, he still hasn't gotten the $10,000. He has nothing nice to say about Stallone now. We just interviewed him recently, 2 hours of nothing but him bad mouthing Stallone and the entire Hollywood industry. And yeah, but the story that I heard from Mike Kunda, who's the number one Rocky impersonator out of Philly, and he's very closely attached to a lot of Stallone and Stallone stuff. He said that Jimmy was originally hired just to take care of Butkus on set, and then made his way into the role of Mike.
Oh my goodness!
So yeah,
wow.
So it was
and
him.
And I always kind of like, I don't like that character, you know.
Yeah.
What are you, deaf? No, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly.
And that bums me out.
Yeah, it was a real bummer.
I would have just given him the dog back.
Yep.
I would just given him the dog back. It's his dog. And from what I saw in Love's Flatbush and Prisoner of Second Ever, long before Rocky, you know, if I had crossed paths with him, I absolutely would have shown him how much I believed in him before Rocky.
Absolutely.
I believed that there was something special about him as an 11-year-old kid, and I was addicted to television.
Yep.
I used to get straight to bed, and I'd get up at 11 o'clock at night when everybody was asleep, and I used to take my cassette recorder, and I used to record like Burns and Allen and the Honeymooners on cassette.
Nice.
And then I would listen to it the next day, and I would memorize the delivery and how Art Carney knew just how long to wait to smack that punchline. I'm 6 years old.
Yeah.
With a cassette recorder, and I mean, I just knew that this is what I'm going to do. And I saw Stallone, and I thought, God, that's right there. That's it. And you know, my grandfather, who had taken me to see Prisoner of Second Avenue, didn't get it. And he didn't get it. He said he's like an extra or something. No. I said, that guy's like James Dean. He's like Elvis. And he's like, yeah, Jack, you're just young. You don't understand. And I'm thinking, yeah, I understood better than you know, Grandpa. I saw him the Flatbush, and I was like, oh, there's it. He played Stanley. You know, I was like,
yeah.
Oh, here we go. Jimmy Gambino, I don't want to harp on him, but Jimmy Gambino actually was put in charge of guarding John Travolta, a good friend of Stallone's,
yep.
on Saturday Night Fever.
That's right.
Yeah, and his attitude was, well, he's a TV actor. What am I, you know, there's not going to be much to do. And then he, first day on the set, people were literally hanging out of their office windows trying to get John Travolta's attention. And he realized he bit off way more than he could chew. This guy is a rock star.
Yeah.
And so Jimmy might have gotten a little bit of karma because he was overwhelmed on Saturday Night Fever working with John Travolta.
Yeah, he was another one that he believe me, nobody was spared in this interview with Jimmy. He went down the list. Everybody was fake. Everybody was a phony. Everybody was a jerk. He made everybody famous, and they all left him for dead.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, we spent a week, my co-host and I, debating whether to even release the episode because, I mean, not only was he so negative toward everybody and everything, but he also had a lot of really disparaging things to say about, you know, like homosexuals. I mean, he was really like off the chart. I mean, we didn't get a word in edgewise. In 2 hours, he just never stopped.
Well, you know, that saddens me because, I mean, you know, first of all, you know, the industry is based on creativity.
Yeah.
Which is why, you know, people like Stallone rise to the top, Spielberg to the top.
Yep.
I mean, if you're creative and you're imaginative, you know, there's no limit. You could provide entertainment. So yeah, the industry, you know, wears costumes and makeup and projects, you know, they act in a way that's derogatory to the way they normally would act, you know, in their lives because they're playing a bad character, a good character, whatever.
Yeah.
But if you're doing something that's contradictive, yeah, that's why they call it acting.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I mean, Gambino, he's not a good actor. I should say Gambino. Yeah, I was born in Brooklyn, man. I take that back. We'll edit that. But I mean, he, you know, he doesn't sweep at a gym.
Right.
You know, he doesn't train somebody who's, you know, fighting for the heavyweight championship. I mean, in that regard, he'd be a hypocrite. I mean, we're in this to morph into something. I mean, it's endless. It's an infinite learning experience. But you get someone like, you know, there's a handful of people that really understand how this goes.
Yeah.
And you know, one of the rules of being an actor is every day You have to do something that scares the crap out of you.
Yep.
Every day, like, you know, whatever it is. And, you know, I mean, I've played a gay guy on in a stage show. I mean, it wasn't like a porno thing. It was just,
right.
You know, I was just playing a gay guy. And it's a character. I mean, you know, it's not who I am when I come home.
Right.
You know, I mean, certainly Mike Myers is not Austin Powers. I mean,
right.
I mean, what did he think he was getting into? The whole industry, you know, lends itself for people to be able to step out of their 9-to-5 lives and really enjoy imagining that they're Judge Dredd or they're Demolition Man or whatever.
Yeah.
And that is the thrill of movies. That's why movies have lasted as long as they have. I mean, this wasn't a fad.
Right.
I mean, movies are fantastic. When you talk to somebody who's going on a date, you know, the first thing they say, we'll probably go to a movie, maybe grab my key. They're going to a movie. Because, right. You know, they're going to a romantic comedy if they're on a date, or, you know, they're certainly not going to see Scarface. But Al Pacino is not a drug dealer from Colombia.
Right.
I'm so disappointed that he got to be in what I consider to be one of the maybe five greatest films ever made.
Yeah.
And he's not grateful. I mean, truly grateful. I mean, I would have been grateful to have driven by the set.
Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, he had that to say, but, you know, not only was he in the first one, but he was also in the fifth one. You know, so if his experiences were so bad, why did he go back?
Sounds like somebody had a mortgage payment.
Yeah. And honestly, I believe because, you know, his dad was, he trained a lot of famous boxers back in the day. And Jimmy, his original ambitions was to be a boxer, but because he was short and he had this debilitating, like, brittle bone disease, he wasn't able to be a boxer. So he was a trainer, you know, and I think that he got, for lack of a better term, he got kind of shorthanded on the boxing. And then I think he went into Hollywood thinking that that was going to be his thing. And it just didn't morph into what he thought it was going to, you know? So I think, now in his 70s, he's like 73, 74.
Yeah, he's the same age as Stallone.
Yeah, he feels like he got slighted, you know, again, you know, in that industry. And so, I mean, he has nothing good. I mean, he was originally working on Raging Bull. And then he claims Stallone made a call and got him kicked off that set. Yeah, it's like, come on, you know, like, I just...
First of all, If I have crossed someone like Stallone or Spielberg or somebody, if I have crossed somebody who's obviously one of the most powerful people in show business, if I'm in the microfiber business and I cross some CEO and, you know, all of a sudden, you know, a buddy of his has another company, they're getting ready to hire me, and this guy says, no, he's a schmuck, don't hire him. You know, that's life.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you burned the bridge.
Yep.
And you certainly don't think that that Stallone is going to be like, oh, yeah, good guy. You know, especially right. If he's been bad enough. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if Stallone made that call, you know, that's kind of reaping what you sow.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm certainly, and it may have been a little bit of my downfall because I'm very humble by every, I'm humbled by every bit of work.
Right.
I mean, I'm grateful when I get a stage show. I'm grateful when I do a TV show. I mean, I have no family in show. I don't have a family who's Francis Ford Coppola.
Right.
You know, I mean, I just literally would not stop auditioning, and they finally got tired of seeing me at the auditions, and they, I mean, I really had a fluke of a career. And I come from a family of blue collar people.
Right.
I mean, and my family was made no bones about the fact that, you know, at 8 years old, I'm telling them, like, you know, I made a decision a few years ago that I'm going to be an actor. They thought that was ridiculous. they thought it was so ridiculous. They were like, yeah. And my brother ended up being a stand-up comic. And, you know, my brother rolled his eyes and he says, next week I want to be a fireman. Week after that, it'll be a spotted dog. And my brother's a really funny comedian, but I just felt like the only way I'm going to get in the door, because it's such a closed community,
yeah,
is if people first first of all, if they like me, and if they understand how very appreciative I am, I recognize that you know, I'm in an industry that only a few chosen people get in.
Right.
There's a million actors, but the truth of the matter is the Screen Actors Guild has like 200,000 members, and of those 200,000 members, there's only about 2,000 at work.
Right.
I mean, we're really, you know, the top echelon of people that have honed their craft.
For sure.
And when I hear somebody turn around and say, you know, bad things about someone who brought so much good. I mean, so much good. You know, I didn't have a father figure when I was growing up. I didn't have a male role model.
Right.
But I needed one. I needed somebody, because my friends were starting to, like, at 10 and 12, they were starting to, like, wonder about drugs and, you know, New York. And I just didn't, that's not, I knew that's not where I wanted to go. And then at 15, I go in the theater and I see this guy who's, you know, life has really gotten the best of him, and he still smiles. It's okay. It's okay. Don't worry about it. It's all right.
Right.
And I thought that's going to be my mantra. It's always okay. You know, it's always going to be okay. And I thought this is going to be my role model. The way this guy does things, I thought I'm going to absorb knowing everything I could learn about this guy.
Right.
And I said that, yeah, that was my attitude. And, you know, I would love the opportunity. I mean, Gambini, I don't know, man. I'm sorry to hear that. That's all I got to say.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to hear that. I mean, when I talk to Carl Weathers and he talks about working on that set, it's a 180 from what you just
said. Oh, absolutely. Me. Yeah.
You know,
well, I knew
Carl doesn't live too far from me. He lives about 5 or 6 miles from me. And you know, he talked about being on that set, smile from ear to ear every day, even the days where you can't throw another punch and Sly is pushing you. He said every day, you know. And,
yeah.
And I just saw The Disaster a couple nights ago, which is based on the horrible movie The Room. But the actresses in that movie, because it's a movie about making a movie, and someone asks her, you know, you're an older woman, why are you still going out and auditioning? Why are you on a set? You probably have grandkids. And she looks this kid right in the eye and she said, let me tell you something. The worst day on a movie set is still better than the best day of your life.
That's right.
and I was with a buddy, my buddy Jim Partridge, and his son's actually an actor. And I pointed at the screen. Well, he goes, that's what you say. And I said, it's true. It's true. And I even know when the worst day I've ever been on a set, the worst day I've ever been on a set was still better than any other day of my life.
Right on.
It's just, it's in your blood, you know, and it's like you, when you're running the Stallone Fanatics thing. I mean, you must perpetuate energy off of all the fans of the fact that you guys have this in common.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, and it's a wonderful feeling of extended family.
Yep.
You know, and I watch the comments all the time. I mean, you really run a good site. I mean,
I appreciate,
you know,
not everybody
keeps an eye on their product like you do. I mean, really, you don't really seem like you take a lot of time off, and you seem like says something complimentary, you acknowledge it, and I mean, you're a really good influence. And I'm surprised you haven't gotten a chance to interview Stallone.
Well, believe me, we're working toward that.
we'll be in a 3-way call if it goes well. Just saying.
we're actually, my co-host and I and a few other guys are planning on making a trip to Philly in February to try and land ourselves in the area of filming locations, and we have a couple of people who might be able to get us close enough to get a hey you kind of deal.
Yeah, like who's the guy on ESPN? Max. He's got one of the talk shows on ESPN.
Oh, Max. Yeah.
He was in Rocky Balboa.
Yeah.
When Rocky got in the ring and he goes, how you doing?
Yeah.
I was like, I've been watching him my whole life. And he's like, oh, man, I'm standing watching. It's just that fast. It's almost like he sprinkled a little something right from heaven, and it's all yours now.
Exactly.
He gave that to you. That's the kind of magic Stallone has.
That's right.
So anyway, this has been like a much greater treat than I ever imagined it would be.
Oh yeah, this is great.
I was like, this is. I said, you know what? I said, I get along with this guy really well. I don't know if we're gonna be able to chat. You know what? We've been chatting for like an hour and a half.
Yeah, yeah.
I just looked at the clock and I'm like, I honestly thought we were in like 35, 40 minutes. We've been an hour and a half. And that's a good sign, man. That's like going to a movie, not realizing it's almost over. You know?
That's right. Well, wrapping up, tell us where people can find you right now. Where can they find your stuff?
Well, you can go to IMDb, go to Jack Vecchio, and you'll see probably about 5% of everything I've ever worked on. I've done a lot of independent films, a lot of cop things and stuff like that. But if you go to IMDb, you'll get a good taste of stuff. And I've sent you some links. And,
yeah.
You know, you're welcome to share. You know, most of the ones that are going around the film festivals and stuff. You know, the
right
films. Yeah, just kind of keep that to you. So that was a gift from me to you.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you. You're really something. But yeah, if people go on IMDb and if they, I'm on the site. I'm on this Stallone Fanatics site. If somebody wants to, you know, reach out, no problem, man. I make time for everybody.
Excellent. Well, this has been fun, man. Right. Let's do this again.
I would love it. I would absolutely love it. And good luck tracking down Stallone. I wish you all the best.
I'll get you on the three-way, I promise.
No, we make sure we don't edit just that part, okay?
That's right.
Don't get creative on me now, Chris.
That's right.
Anyway, you try to stay warm up there in Detroit, okay?
And yeah.
I'm going to take my shirtless shorts and go outside and finish tanning.
Oh, I don't want to hear it.
San Diego, hey, I told you, my door is open. My door is open. You come out here, I'll show you all around town, okay?
Awesome. I appreciate that.
All right, Chris, you take care.
You too, Jack.
Say hello to everybody, okay?
Will do.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.